We are here for another month of Post Pro Res. I am John Pollock, joined by W.H. Park. And W.H., after all these years, I can see you.
It's been amazing, John. It's like the last time I saw you was like, you know, in person was, I don't know, summertime.
It was a long time ago. Yeah,
it was.
Might have been. That's right. All the way back. Well, it's good to see that you look very similar all these months later.
You too.
Yes.
I haven't grown out your hair or anything like that.
No, I haven't done anything wild. No, I have not. How have you been?
Busy. Work was busy today. Work's been busy every day, almost. So it's okay.
How's Toronto treating you? I've been like a hermit the last few months.
I don't know. It's the same. Like, you know, we still have mask mandates here in Ontario. Like, I'm not looking necessarily forward to that being lifted per se. But you know, sometimes I've gone out to go eat, have a bite to eat. It doesn't seem that different from before. So
yeah. Here in Ontario, as of 2 days ago, they have now pretty much dropped any kind of vaccination requirements, or at least like they're no longer asking you for proof of vaccination. I guess like businesses are kind of left. If you want to check, you're free to. But I've been to a few places this week, and now there's no checking your vaccination status. It just seems like that's all been lifted now.
Yeah. So Toronto's treating me about same as usual. You know, I did get a visit from Braden Harrington last week though.
Oh, you did? Well, that's nice.
That worked because he wanted to drop off the poster for his big AEW watch along event.
I see. Are you going to this watch along on Sunday?
I have declined reluctantly. I just, you know, for various reasons.
Because of Braden, I can understand. Yeah.
Hey, you said that, not me. But no, I not because of Braden. It's just my comfort level is not very high to attend a something that I feel might be very well attended. So.
I think it'll be a good time for those that are in Toronto. Braden is hosting a AEW Revolution watch along this Sunday night. It's at the Hard Luck Bar on Dundas Street West. So if you want to go over to the Up Next Podcast Twitter account, they've got all the information pinned there at the top. But maybe WH is just going to wait until WrestleMania weekend. Maybe he will make a big appearance. If they host a WrestleMania viewing party,
he told me what his plans for that are, and he said that maybe Jesse from the Six and Eric Marcoche might show up for that, and if Eric Marcoche comes down from Sudbury for that, I may be inclined to show up to meet Mr. Marcoche.
So. All right, well, something to look forward to, as is everything that is going on in New Japan. We are going to start with New Japan, and then we'll make it our way through everything. I know what everyone is downloading this month's for. Everyone wants WH's unfiltered thoughts on Kazuyuki Fujita. We will get there. I promise we will get there. But let us start off in New Japan. This past week, they held their anniversary card and then the opening night of the New Japan Cup, back-to-back nights at Budokan Hall, drawing 3,182 on night one, 2,007 the second night. So not overwhelming crowds that they did at Budokan, no less. Starting off just with the anniversary card, I will say that I really did enjoy like the pre-show ceremony of bringing back a lot of the names from the past, introducing them. It was unfortunate that the crowd, they can't really react in like a loud kind of way for some of these appearances, but I thought it was like a nice touch for the anniversary to have so many of these names involved with it.
It's nice when New Japan is able to like delve into their history and bring back a lot of these names. And for longtime fans who might have attended the show live, it must have been really nice to see, you know, have kind of that tinge of nostalgia and like remembrance of like the better times of New Japan's history than what we're currently seeing right now.
Yeah, we will get into that as well. Of course, absent was Antonio Inoki. He was like referenced in Okada's speech afterwards, where they had the main event 6-man tag with Tanahashi, Okada, and Tatsumi Fujinami against Minoru Suzuki, Zack Sabre Jr., and Yoshiaki Fujiwara.
Yeah, I think these two of those names might be in next year's Noah N1 tournament, possibly the way trends go in that company, but. I will say this, John. The one of the highlights for me was like seeing the Fujinami team, you know, all their matching robes Very nice.
The robes were nice. The three like Fujiwara armbar sequence by the group, I thought that was enjoyable. I will say the line that I thought was like the line of the show was Keiji Muto coming out at the beginning and Chris Charlton noting, still a hard man to beat, even today.
Well, there's a lot of things going on with Keiji Muto over at NOAH that we'll talk about, I'm sure.
We will get there. The second night featured the opening of the what was a 48-man New Japan Cup, and then we had Kota Ibushi and Hiroshi Tenzan bow out of the tournament. So the Kota Ibushi one was interesting, just in the sense that they went ahead and announced him when I guess it turns out like he's not able to go. Like they have to be just chomping at the bit to get this guy back, and like it's got to be pretty significant if they have to just realize, okay, we can't move forward with Kota Ibushi. But you would figure like let's get all our ducks in a row before we make this big announcement.
I'm really perplexed that they announced him, but obviously they weren't 100% sure that he would be back. They were kind of like hoping and praying that he would be back in time for the New Japan Cup, but it's okay. There's 48 people in this. We're 46 now. So like what's to miss? I mean, it's loaded, John. Fucking 48 fucking people. And like, you know, 24 of them are amazing. Like great names that I was like, yes, I'm so happy to see that person in this thing.
Some of these second round matches are just perplexing as the ones that receive buys. But our results from Wednesday's show saw Shima defeat Taka Michinoku, Tomoki Honma over Yoshihashi, Hirooki Goto over Yuji Nagata, Jeff Cobb over Togi Makabe, Taichi beat Toru Yano. So Taichi goes all the way to the third round because Tenzan was going to be his opponent in the second round. Tanahashi beat Yo in a really nice match. Tetsuya Naito over Yujiro. And the match that everyone seemed to be talking about coming out of this show was Kazuchika Okada defeating El Desperado in a 26-plus minute main event setting up Okada and Master Wato.
Yeah, I haven't seen the show yet, John. So, but that's like that's the one match that I would, you know, go out of my way to watch because I'm a huge fan of Desperado. I know there's a height difference between him and Okada, but I think, you know, Desperado put on a little bit of weight. He could go heavyweight. He has that kind of aura of he could be, you know, if Taichi can be heavyweight, so can Desperado.
He looked great. I just watched this this afternoon, and man, some of the transitions to Numero Dos were just like there is a drop kick where he catches him with a dragon screw mid drop kick into the Numero Dos. It was a pretty fantastic match, and I thought like Okada looked good, but Desperado certainly like I thought that was like a really really big performance for him. I think you will definitely enjoy that match, as I'm sure you will. Naito against Ghetto in the next round, Tanahashi Fale, Jeff Cobb, Satoshi Kojima, Goto, Dick Togo, Honma, Kosei Fujita, and Shima against Yoshinobu Kanemaru. Some of the second round matches that have been set up with the first round continuing Sunday.
It's a testament to how low Taka Michinoku's star has fallen in New Japan that he lost to Shima, who's not even a contracted wrestler with the company. That just tells me also like how much they probably want to try to get like Al Lindemann into the Best of the Super Juniors this coming year, and maybe T-Hawk as well.
So as you look at this, you know, this now 46-man New Japan Cup, like what is some kind of like finals or outcome like that would just be a direct shot to your heart to bring WH Park and really get your attention for the New Japan Cup?
Honestly, just push Jeff Cobb all the way in this fucking thing and get him in that main event mix. Get him in the title picture. That would be fresh. That would be exciting. Otherwise, you know, there's a lot of booking problems in this country, John. You know, like New Japan, NOAH, All Japan. But the one thing I'll say about Ghetto as a booker is that he's not a terrible booker, in my opinion. I just think he's uninspired and it's just very stale. And he doesn't seem to be having any fresh ideas. I think pushing Jeff Cobb, who's a guy that they have in the country, and you know, don't have to worry about like, you know, quarantining or not being able to get him back into Japan for big events. Get him, use him as long as he's able to stay in Japan. And I think if you push him really hard, like he's over with the crowd, and I think he'll draw more international fans maybe back into the company.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at these brackets, I mean, he's going to beat Kojima. He's going to beat the Yoshihashi Tomoaki Honmo, the Yoshihashi and Kosei Fujita winner. So he's already going to probably face like either a Tanahashi or Naito, unless they just decide with Fale to put him over big in this New Japan Cup, which is very possible.
Like, yes.
The New Japan Cup, they don't put the most stacked matches in these earlier tournament matches. So getting Tanahashi and Naito is hardly a given in such an early round of this tournament. That Fale beating Tanahashi and even beating a Naito, or you do some stupid finish where Ghetto advances past Naito, all conceivable, all possible.
Yes, it's a kind of a free-for-all, the New Japan Cup, more so than the G1 Climax. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at the schedule, John. Like, the semifinals and the finals are the same days as the big Stardom shows with the return of Kairi.
That's right.
It just, like, makes me laugh because it's just like the parent company's the same, but you're having these big events. Like, and I know, like, if I'm in the country, if I have to choose between the two, like which one I'm going to the Stardom shows. One, they're in Tokyo. They'd be a lot closer if I was still in Numazu. But here, keep in mind that I love Osaka, and I will take any excuse to go there and visit that city. But you know, I look at the Stardom cards, which we'll talk about later. These things are fucking stacked, and I can't see anything really that would excite me enough on like overall in this New Japan Cup or New Japan overall that would make me want to make a trip out to Osaka for those shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't even realized they were the exact same day. So it's like back to back nights at Osaka Joe Hall for New Japan on the days when Stardom is at Sumo Hall, which you're right. Those two Stardom shows are going to be huge. We will get into those. Are you following much of New Japan Strong at the moment?
I delve here and there, but you know, the word usually on like, you know, on Twitter, for example, is pretty strong about Strong, you know, like that it is probably the better brand under the New Japan umbrella. There's a lot of interesting, fresh matchups, and they seem to be really keen on pushing younger talent in there. And that, I think that's the key, like that might be missing from New Japan right now, is you're not really pushing the younger talent, or trying to make new stars per se. And the people you are trying to make new stars aren't clicking for a variety of reasons. You know, either they're not catching on or they just fucking suck. You know, like, yeah, I'm talking about Evil, obviously, you know, so.
Well, that could maybe be the, you know, if Evil prevails in all of this, I'm sure you'll just be really reconsidering, if only I could be in Osaka for two nights.
For Evil and House of Torture, my favorite things, and all of Japanese wrestling. Mine's just not the thing I hate the most in Japanese wrestling these days. We'll get to that, though. Don't worry.
Yeah. I've got to say, like, usually, like, you can go pretty deep on the New Japan stuff, and it just seems like, yeah, they're doing this tournament right now, but I do think, like, there's just like a really small buzz attached to this year's New Japan Cup. It doesn't seem like it feels, I was saying today, like it feels like it's a 16 man tournament, but they've expanded it to 48.
Yeah. Well, which it perplexes me. It's like, why would you spend the money on like all those extra bodies? Because they're not going to be cheap. And you're not like, you're raking in money. You're drawing 1,000 less people to fucking Budokan Hall. Budokan Hall holds over 12,000 people.
Yeah, these attendances are not just chalked up to capacity restrictions. Like, this is this is well below 50% of what Budokan holds.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1,000 less than the night before, which goes to show you it's the other problem with New Japan, and it's a constant problem since the pandemic, is this idea of like, we have to do multiple nights in one venue. And we don't have the cards to draw people, because like, you know, New Japan Cup night one, the second night at Budokan, is basically, you know, I read Mark Buckley's report, and he's basically summed it up. It's a one match card, is that worth, like, if I'm deciding which one to go to, do I go to the anniversary show or do I go to this? And I'm sure a lot of people in Japan, and they're still have restrictions there with COVID and stuff, that, you know, what are you going to spend your money on? Well, I would spend my money on the anniversary show, because for the nostalgia factor.
So we've also got with New Japan, of course, they're going to be sending talent over for their Lone Star Shootout over WrestleMania weekend, and then their show in Chicago a couple of weeks later, which I understand our own Karen Peterson will be there in attendance for.
Yeah, she's always like pretty excited about this. When I talk to her privately about like what's coming up, and she's, you know, the thing she's most excited about is going to these shows live. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we're going to get some live reports from on the site or something, John. I don't know if you've negotiated that with her or not, but she's going to be, I'm sure, very enthusiastic over on Twitter, live tweeting it.
Yes, and she will be providing reports for Stardom's upcoming cards at Sumo Hall at the end of the month. So March 26th and 27th is going to really the major, I would say, focus is the return of Kairi after going to WWE in 2017. And she was revealed as the mystery woman earlier this month. And look, what kind of attention do you think that this is going to bring to Stardom from somebody that maybe only saw Kairi in WWE? Like, this does seem to be, for people kind of hearing this buzz about Stardom, sometimes it takes that performer that you're most familiar with that you eventually cross that bridge and dive into a new company. I think that this could represent some growth for Stardom, just bringing back an audience that maybe has not seen the product.
Yeah, I think she's that crossover person that, you know, oh, I liked her work in NXT. I liked, you know, the stuff she did with Asuka and the Kabuki Warriors on main roster WWE. I miss watching her. Oh, she's back in Japan. She's wrestling for a company called Stardom. Oh, there's some buzz around that company. I'm gonna watch it. You know, and on a side note, like, my interest in Stardom, it was a direct result of her being in the Mae Young Classic. And like, I always had a blind spot towards Joshi, you know, Joshi wrestling before that. And then I thought, okay, she's from this company called Stardom, which I've heard of, you know, it has of all the Joshi companies at the time, it was like the one that had the most prominence. And so like, okay, I'm going to dive into it. Oh, the streaming service is up. Oh, it's only 1,000, you know, just under 1,000 yen. That's cheap. I'll get into it. And I've never looked back, John, and I've gone to live shows when I was in Japan. And so like, I think I'm kind of that kind of a person that be like, okay, I wasn't familiar with Joshi wrestling. I watched Mae Young Classic. Who's this? Oh, Kairi Sane. She's great. I really like her. Where is she from? She's from Stardom. So I think you're going to see that kind of crossover. I mean, also talking with Davey Portman, when it was announced, I said to him, oh, look, she's back. She's going to be in Stardom. He's so excited. He's him being, you know, Davey being a huge Kairi Sane fan. So he's very excited. I think, you know, like, if we use him as an example of him being a Kairi fan from her days in NXT, he's going to follow her going over into Stardom. So, and I think he's an example of a lot of fans that are going to give Stardom a try. And great. And you know, it's the best product to get into these days.
Yeah, I mean, you just saw all of the buzz coming off of their recent show just a couple of weeks ago, in particular the Azumi Starlight Kid match. That just seems to have gotten a ton of praise from everyone. And now you have these back-to-back nights. They're big shows for the company. For the first night, March the 26th, it's going to feature Shuri against Julia for the World of Stardom title, Saya Kamatani against Utami for the Wonder of Stardom title, Hazuki and Koguma against Momo Watanabe, and X for the Goddesses of Stardom tag titles.
No, that's Starlight Kid, actually.
Has it been revealed as Starlight Kid?
It's going to be Starlight Kid. So Momo Watanabe and Starlight Kid are going to be facing FWC for the Goddesses tag team titles.
And then, of course, the big one is Kairi teaming with Mayu Iwatani against Tom Nakano and Unagi Sayaka. That's Kairi's first match back. The second night, she'll be taking on Starlight Kid in a singles match.
Yeah, I mean, with those title matches, John, like, I can't say for sure who's going to win between Shuri and Julia, because like either person makes a ton of sense to put the big belt on them.
I'll throw a third one out, WH. The second night, the idea of Mayu winning this title and coming out of the weekend, I wouldn't discount that idea either. I think Kairi and Mayu at some point for the big belt, to me, would be a massive match to build to eventually. And starting this off is like her first match back is teaming with her. And maybe like 6-9 months down the road, you could move to a big title match.
Well, that's the beauty of, like, in my opinion, of Stardom these days, you know, is that you can go in so many different directions, and you have the talent and you have built these stars that it's possible. Like, you look at some of other companies in Japan, it's like, no, they're not gonna put it on that person, or they're not gonna take it off this person. They're not gonna take it off Shuri. Well, they might take it off Shuri to put it on Julia. And if they put it on Julia, they might take it off of her to put it on Mayu Iwatani the next night. Like, you could go in any direction, John. Same thing with the Wonder of Stardom title. Like, yeah, Sayaka Iwatani is like a push commodity. She's someone they obviously have high hopes for. And, you know, she's the current Wonder of Stardom champion. But, you know, Utami's coming off like being dethroned by Shuri for the red belt. And now this is her first chance to get, because I don't think she's ever held the white belt, the Wonder of Stardom title. So, and she's someone that they want to keep in the main event mix. So, like, could Utami win the white belt? I think it's entirely possible. And then you have all these other directions. Like, who's she facing on the, she's not, whoever the winner is, doesn't have another title match, I don't think.
It's Kamatani and Utami on the first night, and then the winner will defend against Tom Nakano on the second night.
So, and then, you know, Tom was the person Saya beat for that title. Mm-hmm. And then and she's like, she had such an amazing run with that belt, like, that you could see it could go either way. Like, Saya has a rematch with her for that belt, or Utami faces Tom Nakano, which is a fresh match for that belt. And could Tom win it again? Sure, it's entirely possible. You can go any direction with either of the big singles belts in Stardom.
Yeah, I think these two shows are really going to set the entire year for Stardom, of just the many different directions that they're going in. And I think just the way that we've outlined where this kind of world of Stardom picture could go in many different directions, I think there's several plausible outcomes here. When it comes to Kairi, like, it sounds like she's not going to be on every single show, and you're going to be strategic. Do you think that, like, kind of what are you expecting out of Kairi this year? Is it someone that maybe you build to 3 to 4 big matches a year? Do you expect her to be more involved than that?
I think, you know, you save her for big, you know, like, quote unquote pay-per-view matches, like you're running Osaka Joe or Osaka Edion Arena. Okay. She's on those. She's, you know, they're going to run a big stadium in Nagoya. Save her for that. You're going to, or, you know, Sumo Hall or Budokan, maybe again. Yeah. You save her for those. You don't have to have her in fucking, you know,
the Cinderella tournament or something like that.
You don't need her in like some spot show that's only, you know, holds 500 people in the audience. You don't need that. I would save her for Korakuen shows, like have her do angles in a Korakuen show. Don't have her necessarily do a match at a Korakuen show, but you just have her do angles and build up to a big match that they're going to be promoting on a big show, whether it's in the spring or the summer. But yeah, just save her. Like, I also don't think she's, you know, like, looking to be a full-time wrestler again. And, you know, like, Karen also makes a point of, like, she just opened up a 24-hour gym, and she's a personal trainer. And so she's got her side business, which is, like, I would imagine her big priority. But this is something that I think coming back to Stardom was probably something that was on her bucket list, especially with the growth, especially with the Bushiroad ownership of the company, and that it is probably the hottest thing in Japan right now.
Yeah, it just seems to me like the year that they're coming off of, and the Kairi news, I think is going to just push that forward. And it's an interesting discussion that came out of like this year's like whole Hall of Fame discussion, is kind of where you place like Rossi Ogawa with, you know, these are, you know, I would say significant years for Stardom, their biggest year that they're coming off of, and 2022 having the potential to be even bigger. Like, do you look at Rossi Ogawa, like the legacy of just his involvement specifically with women's professional wrestling, of, is it like a Hall of Fame level of promoter that he has reached at this point?
I would give it a couple more years to see if it's a sustained, you know, success story for Stardom. Like, if the next year or two are, you know, Stardom is at a level with, in terms of the box office and like kind of the quality of shows that they're producing, you know, month in, month out on all their big shows, if this continues for another year or two, it could be a point where, like, okay, he's having a, you know, a similar run as a promoter that, like, you know, Ghetto had as a booker in 2016 onward, you know, for the, then 2 years subsequently after that, you know, I would definitely consider him to be like someone that you would say is a Hall of Famer promoter if the success is sustained. Like he was doing a really good job before the Bushiroad buyout, but then just having Bushiroad pump all this money into the company, so now like he can like hire all these people. Like he went, oh, I'm gonna go to Ice Ribbon, I'm gonna take Julia, and I'm gonna go to Just Tap Out and take Micah, and I'm gonna, you know, go to TJPW and get Natsupoi and all these people that I want into the company. Mm-hmm. He can do it because, like, you know, like if you're an independent wrestler and you have the option of getting a steady Bushiroad paycheck, you know, like, no, does, you know, company loyalty in Japan goes very far, but at the end of the day, you know, money talks, bullshit walks, and like, you're gonna go, that's a steady paycheck, and it's a pretty good steady paycheck.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you about Rossi Ogawa. I bring it up, he is going to be on the Observer ballot next year, so it's more just a chance to kind of really look at his resume. I'd be very stunned if he gets a ton of support next year. Also on the ballot next year is Shingo Takagi, and I could imagine this is good news for your support of Taue. They're going to pair him with Toshiaki Kawada next year, and I think that will get Taue above the threshold, and I did vote for Taue this year.
I would imagine the Holy Demon Army, you know, one of the rightly regarded as one of the greatest tag teams, and something, and a team that, you know, Dave really promotes and has always supported in the newsletter and on his shows is going to get a lot of buzz and get probably, you know, I if they don't get in this first ballot, John, like I'd be surprised. They, you know, like they are going to get a lot of, I think, attention leading up to the Hall of Fame vote. If they're on the ballot. So yeah, everyone, if you're a ballot holder, vote for the Holy Demon Army. They're the greatest tag team. If not, you know, they are one of the greatest, if not the greatest tag team of all.
Well, research them. Go dive into it. And a great place to start is the Long and Winding Royal Road. You can get the extensive breakdowns of both men's careers and a lot of crossover between those two podcast episodes. We'll plug the Long and Winding Royal Road later, but it is time now. The Long and Winding Royal Road of one Kazuyuki Fujita that has led him to his first GHC Heavyweight Championship at the age of 51, going down on February 23rd in Nagoya, 643 fans hanging from the rafters as Katsuhiko Nakajima losing to Fujita. And there are few endings to matches that I could not possibly watch without thinking about you watching than this one. Dude, Fujita, it's one thing. He's going over Nakajima. Dude, he made this guy look like just trash. Just total trash. Does the 1-2, lift the shoulders up, and then another bullshit beast bomb, and then pins him. Like, that to me, it was like, I'm not just beating you, I'm humiliating you in the process of doing it. It was just, I just thought it was such a terrible end to Nakajima's reign. And like, we have, month in, month out, we have raved about Noah's heavyweight scene of late, like the Nakajima Kenno classics that those two have had. To me, Nakajima, this was the time to, you know, I'm not saying this is the transformative star for Noah, but he was the guy to run with now until you have that guy that you're ready to go with. Fujita was not that guy.
No, you build towards Kiyomiya. Come, you know, challenging him for that belt down line, or go, like, there's, you know, Go Shiozaki. The history between those, him and Nakajima, is like rife.
Like, there was a solid core there. Like, oh, I was even one that, like, a year ago, it's like, I know people weren't crazy about Muto. Like, Fujita is not Muto. Like, you can't even make that argument. This is a real perplexing one for me. And I tend to give benefit of the doubt more often than you, but you, I think, Your opinion is probably mirrored by just about everyone.
I couldn't believe the result just because, like, I thought, okay, Nakajima is someone that they, you know, want to keep happy. Nakajima is someone they believe in. And then I read this, you know, report from you know, the Voices of Wrestling Patreon about backstage happenings in Noah. And, you know, the fucking original plan was like, Fujita was supposed to win the belt for him. He was originally supposed to win the belt for him. And then Muto was supposed to win the national title. Because in Nosawa Ranga, who's the booker for Wrestling Noah, he thinks the big match we're going to have for the August return in Budokan Hall, that's going to draw a lot of fucking money, is fucking Kazuyuki Fujita versus fucking Keiji Muto in a title unification match. And are you fucking kidding me? No, that's not your... Because, listen, no one's going to fucking watch these fucking guys who are, like, past their prime. Muto was a star. Was is, you know, the operative word. This man had matches where he says, I'm going to retire the moonsault. For good reason. Because, like, he has no knees and no hips now anymore. And, like... And Fujita's just never been a draw. He's never been... Maybe one or two fucking pride fights, sure. I don't know.
He had some well-remembered fights. But, like, again, he was... He was never, like, I think that's a lot of just romanticism about pride. Like, it was, you know, some of the fights that he did have, like, with Crow Cop, they're well-remembered fights. But I just... I never saw him as kind of that crossover. Like, this was not... this was hardly like Sakuraba we're talking about in just in terms of that endearment with the Japanese audience.
And this is indicative of like this man's attitude towards doing jobs. It's like when he lost the IWGP title to Kensuke Sasaki, who is Nakajima's mentor, he did it in such a bullshit way where like he pinned himself essentially. And then Kensuke is like, gets the belt and he's like, what the fuck is this? Like, that's not, you know, he double crossed him. This is complete bullshit. He not only does he beat him for the title, he makes him look like shit in the process. And why would you do that? Why would you agree to do that? And it perplexes me because the four guys you should be building in Noah are Nakajima, Go Shiozaki, Kaito Kiyomiya, and Kenno. With people like Daiki Inaba in the background, Yoshiki Inamura, Masa Kitamiya even, as like solid upper mid-card people underneath those guys that can challenge for the title. Whoever's holding it. And Fujita and Muto are like just indicative of the problems, the underlying problems in Noah, which is the booking of Nosawa Rangai, who friend books. This is all nepotism. This is all, he's a spineless jellyfish. He's like, he's a mark. And you don't want marks running a fucking wrestling company. You want business people who have, you know, knowledge about professional wrestling, how it works to run a wrestling company. But I have zero interest in following Noah at this point. Like the tag team title tournament is something I will watch. But if you said Fujita versus Masato Tanaka, that's the next title match. I don't fucking care. Like, why don't you put like the fucking belt on someone under the age of 45, please?
That's like, that is the scene we have. Like, we're just coming off of Muto, who we'll get into, vacating the tag titles. You've got Fujita holding the GHC title, and you have Funaki with the national title on top of it. It's like, I enjoy like Funaki and like these short matches. There's a role for a Funaki, but when you couple it with everything, like it really does, color your picture of like this booking. And like to you, the fan, it's the idea that our current crop is, they are not stars. Like this, we are trying to turn back time, and that is the audience that we are after, because we do not have that faith in like those four, that core that you just outlined there. And I think that's just a problem to have. And it's just, to me, Fujita, it's like, I can tell you like an argument of like a Muto, which I think that experiment did not work out well. But the idea that, okay, he's this nostalgic figure, I don't think Fujita comes with that nostalgia. Like, I think if you are putting your eggs into that basket, you are going to be woefully disappointed.
You have to keep in mind also with Pro Wrestling Noah is that they, you know, their fan base, their hardcore fan base wants to see people that they came up with in the lean times succeed and be pushed as to become stars in the overall pro wrestling scene. Like, they want to see Kenno, Kiyomiya, you know, Nakajima, and Go like be pushed hard in the company, not these outsiders. Because so Muto is an outsider, Fujita is an outsider, Masato Tanaka is an outsider, you know, Funaki is an outsider. These are not Noah Trueborns or people who have been with the company thick and thin. I think most, and I think it's a turnoff for a lot of hardcore, longtime Noah fans that, oh, why am I seeing these guys? I don't want to see these guys hold the GHC title. I don't want to see them, you know, be pushed over these, you know, the people that I'm invested in. I don't think you're going to find most Noah fans are invested in someone like a Fujita or Muto anymore. Like, if Muto's got the tag titles, okay. Well, I mean, doesn't have them anymore. That's another story that we're going to talk about. But it's just detrimental, and it's just a sign that you need to have some kind of change in terms of who the booker is in Pro Wrestling NOAH.
Yeah, and on the tag title front, like, due to Muto's hip problems, they have had to vacate him and Marufuji vacated the tag title. So March 13th at Yokohama Budokan, they'll do a one-night four-man tournament with Marufuji and new partner Masaki Mochizuki against Kaito Kiyomiya and Daiki Inaba. And then on the other bracket, Kenno and Funaki teaming up against Takeshi Sugiura and the returning to Japan, Hideki Suzuki, off of his Diamond Mine run.
Which he was really good just standing outside saying nothing.
Yes.
I like Hideki Suzuki, so I'm actually kind of excited to see him come back. He's another person who has a reputation for not doing jobs or, you know, being problematic with
he'll do fine. He'll do tremendous in this.
Yeah, if the band put him in with Fujita, who's not doing the job, like it's going to be a struggle. You know, that's probably the more interesting battle. It's like the argument is like, I'm not jobbing to you. I'm not jobbing to you. And, you know, see who gives in first. But I don't know. Like, again, I'm surprised that Kinomiya and Inamura, you know, they just reformed their tag team of the Tough. It's a great name, by the way. And they're not in this, which is surprising to me. I'm going to just go out there and say, you know, Marufuji and Mochizuki, who we saw live when they won the tag titles in Korakuen Hall when last time we were at a live show together for Pro Wrestling NOAH. I'm going to say just they're going to put the belts on them because they're perfectly good tag team. And I have no problems with like Mochizuki at his age, who can still go, by the way, and is a total professional. He'll put people over. He'll do jobs. Him and Marufuji as tag team champions. Again, I'm perfectly fine with that. If they get the belts.
Where do you see the state of Kaito Kiyomiya, and is, you know, he's 25 years old. This guy is hardly, you know, he's got many, many, many years ahead of him. But I thought last year was a very rough year for him in terms of that booking. I think it was a really bad thing that he never got the Muto win. But do you see that as just a bump in the road for him, that this guy is ultimately going to be okay? Or is this a key year for him just in terms of establishing him so that he is not lost in the shuffle, which is kind of how he felt like coming out of all of those Muto matches last year?
He's someone that's very difficult to talk about because he is obviously the person that they should be grooming to be the ace of the company over the next 5 years. And they were on that road with his first title reign being so long and just pushing him to the moon. And it's like, okay, like I never thought that he delivered in every match, but like this new persona of his, like I think it's way more suited to be a main event player, but he's not getting the push that he deserves to get to that level, in my opinion. You know, people,
would he be ready for it now, do you feel?
I think so. I think there's a maturity that and a kind of more assuredness in his persona and like the way he carries himself in the ring that wasn't necessarily there before. People like mentioned this whole idea like, oh, he's getting the Okada push. I mean, Okada lost to Tanahashi and he cried. Like when Kiyomiya lost that tag match him and Muto had against Tanahashi and Okada. But it's like, listen, the ultimate outcome of that was going to be Okada beating Tanahashi. And you had no worries that was going to happen because Tanahashi is a pro.
He was also Okada was, you know, it was like, okay, Tanahashi is at this level, but it's like Okada still had wins over Tanahashi and he was the guy. It was just he hadn't got that Tokyo Dome win, which was the elusive victory, but he had had his wins against Tanahashi and he had had his title reigns. And you could see that, okay, if he's not 1A, he's 1B to Tanahashi. And I don't see that with Kiyomiya at this point. Like there is still a significant hurdle for him to even be at kind of that upper tier, much less kind of where he is right now.
Well, the other thing is, you know, like the story would have to be that to reach that level, he has to beat Muto. And the way the word coming out of Japan is like Muto will not job to this guy.
I no longer have faith in that. I was one that was always clinging to that has to happen because it was so obvious. I think that ship has sailed now.
It's not going to happen. And so he's pretty much fucked, you know, like in that company right now, as long as Nosawa is the booker and Muto and Fujita and their ilk are running rampant in this fucking company, like Kiyomiya, Nakajima, Go, these guys are all fucked, John. Like if like they decided to jump ship, their contracts expire and they're saying, you know what? Fuck this. We're going to Gleet. We're going to fucking go to All Japan. Awesome. I have no sympathy for, you know, the state of Pro Wrestling Noah right now, because they, you know, they refuse to see the forest from the trees and take out Nosawa as the booker and get, and they just signed Fujita to a fucking contract. I can't look. Like, are you guys nuts?
They're freelancer this whole time.
Holy shit. It's like, you guys are crazy. Like, to me, the best outcome would be like, you know, Jun Akiyama is over in DDT. It's all under the same banner, right? Same Cyber Agent banner. Like, Jun Akiyama just says, you know what? Fuck this shit. DDT, thanks for the memories. I had an awesome time. Hey, I'm coming to Noah. Kick that fucking Nosawa goof out of here, and I'm taking over the book.
I want everyone to note that there was not one F-bomb from WH until we got to Fujita and the Noah part of today's show, and you just let them fire off. You're very strategic with them.
Yeah, I just, you know, can't help myself when this topic comes up, John.
So Fujita's first defense will be against Masato Tanaka on March the 21st in Fukuoka, a event that I have dubbed 100 to signify their combined age by that date, because Tanaka, I believe he just turned 49. And then on that same show, we have Atsushi Kotoge and Yohei against Kotaro Suzuki and WH's favorite Nosawa Rangai for the junior heavyweight tag team titles.
Here's the other problem with Nosawa's booking is that he cannot go a quarter period in the year without someone fucking turning, at least two people turning in the junior division. So there's no stability in that. So it's like fucking musical chairs in Noah's junior division, plus all these fucking IGF fucks like running rampant in the company is just ridiculous. And I, you know, pick and choose what I want to watch from Noah. I refuse to watch complete shows, and I refuse to watch anything with these people that I fucking hate in the company.
Have you watched any of Gleet?
Yeah, so I watched L. Lindemann taking on his strong heart teammate T-Hawk.
Yeah.
In the semifinals of the G-Rex. Have you seen this belt, by the way, the G-Rex title?
Yes. Yes.
It's so ridiculous that it's good. I will say that about that title belt. And the name is just absolutely ridiculous too. But I like this kind of ridiculousness about Gleet's naming of things. But and then the finals against I believe it was Takanori Yudo, both were really great. And to me, that's a great sign that, okay, L. Lindemann, you didn't think, I thought it would be T-Hawk, or I thought it was going to be Ryuichi Kawakami who's going to be the first, you know, Gleet champion. But they picked L. Lindemann, and I'm like, that's fucking great. That's an inspired choice, because, like, he's a junior heavyweight. So they're willing to make their first champion a junior heavyweight. But he's such a great wrestler, John. Like, I am excited about how long they're going to push him as the champion. And because I think in the ring, you think, oh, the guy's really short or whatever, but this guy's ripped. And he is super strong for a guy his size. Like, think like he's like kind of a Japanese version of, like, I guess Tyler Bate, in the sense like he's a, you know, not a very tall person, but is very strong. That was his gimmick. The same thing with L. Lindemann, but L. Lindemann is a much better wrestler in my opinion. But I'm excited about where they're going to go with him as their first champion. And it, to me, Gleet is just a company that I think people should watch if they're tired of like a lot of the staleness or some of these insane booking ideas that come out of the other you know, predominantly male companies in Japan. Gleet is it's on YouTube. All their major shows are free.
It's free. And that last show, the Corken Hall show, man, people were raving about this as like potentially like show of the year.
Yeah, it's a good solid product, and it's a fresh roster, and they push like promising younger stars, and it's a fun, and they have you know, a women's division. They push kind of like shoot fighting style, the you style in that's booked by Kiyoshi Tamura, and they have like all their pro wrestling stuff is booked by Kaz Hayashi, who knows what the fuck he's doing. Like he booked, you know, All Japan in one of the best periods of that company's, you know, time, you know, in the past 20 years. So it's a good product to kind of jump in on, and it's so easy to watch. It's all on YouTube and it's free.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they have like really cultivated a bit of a buzz around them in that last show. It seems like that's a great jumping on point with the championship tournament that they did there. We're gonna close things down shortly, but let's move on to All Japan. They recently had Kento Miyahara defend the Triple Crown against Abdullah Kobayashi. I know this was the title challenger that you had been salivating over all year. And they've got their Champions Night card coming up same day as Noah Presents 100 on March 21st at Oda Ward with Kento Miyahara against Shuji Ishikawa. Jake Lee is returning on that show after he broke his nose and orbital bone. That was a terrible injury, and that is, and of course Tatsumi Fujinami, who's just on a tear in 2022.
Well, he's going to be on like every 50th anniversary show in Japan. It seems like
he's going to get a lot of bookings this year between
there,
both.
There you go. Like maybe he'll be on the 100th show, the Noah 100th show, because like, hey, why not? You know.
He could. Yeah, he could be challenging Fujita for all we know. Maybe. Maybe you save that.
Maybe he'll enter
the carnival.
Fujita's will be like, Fujita will say, "I'll drop to Fujinami. Why not?" And then, you know. But I did watch that match though, with Miyahara versus Abdullah Kobayashi, and it was as bad as I thought it was going to be. Just and I love Kento Miyahara, as most people know. Like, and he got he did his best. He really did. And here's the thing. There's a reason why Abdullah Kobayashi is a deathmatch wrestler who uses smoke and mirrors, or in this case, light tubes and fucking baseball bats covered in barbed wire. It's because he's terrible as a pro wrestler. And so, like, he can only get any heat by doing all that bullshit. But, you know, that being said, it's very impressive. Kento Miyahara got this man up in a German suplex, and he got a bridge on the fucking guy. So, there you go. So, yeah. Kudos to him for that.
What do you see in terms of Jake Lee coming back? Does he get like right back into the title picture? What are you? How much are you like intrigued by just what's going on in general in All Japan?
Let's talk about this return match. It's a 10-man tag match. Total Eclipse, Jake Lee's heel faction in All Japan, and they're bringing back the former heel stable in All Japan back in the day, the Voodoo Murasjan. And you can imagine my dismay when on Instagram, when I you know, scroll down and there's the All Japan website, and who do I fucking see? Fucking Taru. And I'm like, no, are you fucking kidding me? And then people are like, no, it's only one night. Listen, these fucking cockroaches have a way of like ingratiating themselves into being more than one night. Hopefully it's only one night with fucking Taru back in All Japan and fucking Voodoo Murders. But like, Shuji Kondo's coming back. That's fine. I'm okay with Shuji Kondo. He's fucking awesome. But listen, like, Jake Lee better fucking win that match. That's all I'm going to say. And the interesting thing is, like, the match where he got injured was against Ryuki Honda, who is now a member of Total Eclipse. And it's actually pushed pretty strong in the company, John. And he's kind of pushed as kind of like this de facto leader of Total Eclipse. So obviously, I think the big question is like, what's going to happen between Ryuki Honda and Jake Lee in terms of like, is it going to be a turn? Is Jake going to become a babyface, or is he going to be heel? But in terms of your original question, is should he be pushed back into the title picture? I think so. I think, you know, that belt was unfortunately taken off of him because of his injury. He should have had a long reign with that title. I think him beating Miyahara clean in a singles match would do wonders to rehabilitate him in terms of his position in the company. And he's someone you need to run with. Kento Miyahara is someone you can always rely upon, but it's not fresh. And you need something fresh in this company. You need to push Jake Lee. You need to push Shotaro Ashino. You need to push Yuma Aoyagi, not necessarily at the top, but close to the top as a title challenger in the tag team title situation. You don't need fucking Abdullah Kobayashi. But to Abdullah Kobayashi's credit, they drew 794 people.
It wasn't a bad number for what Cork and Hall is drawing these days. 794, I think many companies will take that.
Yeah, so kudos to him. Credit where credit is due. I'm sure a lot of Big Japan fans came over to see him, you know, lose, because they knew he was going to win that title. But there you go. But hey, Kento got him up in a fucking German suplex with a bridge. That's impressive.
While we are on the All Japan section, I do want to give out a book recommendation. I did recently read Gunbaru by Jonathan Foy. This is up on Amazon if you want to buy it. It's a relatively cheap purchase if you want to get it on your Kindle. But it's like a really good documentation of kind of the history of All Japan and really detailing the split from with Misawa and so much of the roster in the spring of 2000. And I mean, it's to read about it, like, it really is remarkable, WH, that All Japan lived through that, that they made their way through that, how much of a savior Tenryu was at that time. And Motoko Baba, like, really, like, her hands were tied. Like, she had to make contact with Tenryu, who was pretty much, you know, persona non grata when Baba was still alive, when he had left. And the fact that All Japan did not die at that point, it was, and actually kind of thrived for a bit of time there working with New Japan. They were pretty desperate to have to reach out and do what they could, but got through a very, very tumultuous period.
Yeah, I started reading it. I have a physical copy of it.
Okay.
I just saw the cover. I thought, I gotta get a physical copy of this. Oh, it's on Amazon Canada. Okay. It's not going to cost me. I don't have to order it from Amazon Australia or anything like that. That's awesome. So yeah, definitely. If you like cool art, take a look at it on Amazon. It's a really cool book to have. It's not a very long book. It's not very expensive either. So like I recommend getting either for your Kindle or a physical copy of it. I started reading, I haven't finished it, but it's a very like detailed book, and there's a lot of details in there. And like Jonathan Foy did a lot of great research for this book from what I'm able to read so far. And you know, it's a kind of like not really explored part of Japanese, you know, wrestling history. And it's such an important part to like current day, you know, like Japanese wrestling, because All Japan survived this split with Kawada and Fuchi, you know, Stan Hansen sticking around for a little while, you know, Taiyo Keiya being pushed, and the return of Jinrikisho Tenryu. And, you know, but, you know, like there's the whole, and then you get the whole idea of like Muto coming in and Motoko Baba, I can't work with Misawa because he wants to change the company. And then, but then she sells the company to Keiji Muto, who really changes the company to being nothing like what, you know, Giant Baba's vision of wrestling was, or what Null Japan was before in the 90s. It's really interesting. It's a very, very fascinating, look at how a company has to change, has to adapt to survive and become the success that it did become, and still, you know, not thriving per se, but like still doing okay.
Yeah, and I think like you will come away with it of, you know, there's probably positive and negative you can say about Motoko Baba, but she very well could have just like with this exodus of talent, losing TV, like at that point you're just like, like this was like the Babas were never that reliant on pro wrestling. They had made their money, and she could have just cashed in at that point and said, listen, I'm done with this wrestling thing. She got through a really rough stretch and kept the company alive enough to hand it off to Muto in 2002. And I would say, like, I don't know if many companies could have just survived that. And when you're reading about this, like to lose television and 90% of your roster and to come out of it, it's I found that to be like a really, as you said, interesting period of history to kind of document, and her role in that whole part of trying to bridge one era of All Japan into its next. It's I don't think they will ever be back to the glory days, but they did make it through and at least were in business.
They had such a chance, John, when Akiyama, Shiozaki, you know, Aoki, you know, Suzuki and Kanemaru jumped when Burning invaded All Japan, and they had fucking Sanada, Soya, all these fucking great talent in All Japan at the time mixed in with those. But they fucked it. And it's so disappointing to me. And I think that's one of my big pro wrestling what ifs. If the Muto didn't fuck off to form Wrestle One because he wasn't getting along with the new owner of All Japan, if they all stayed, what would All Japan look like today? It makes me sad, actually.
You are the person to do it. Like, one day you have to do like the deep analysis of Keiji Muto, the good, the bad, all of it. Like, what a career to go into, because I think, like, honestly, like the last 10 years, like, you will look at Muto and it's You know, there's a lot to be said about a Muto. If you want to compare him to a Hogan or whoever you will, like there's a lot to dive into there, I think.
2001, he was my favorite wrestler, John.
I know. That was an incredible year back when Muto, he was done. 2000, those knees are not going to last. And here we are in 2022. He's coming back. He's coming back to win the GHC title.
Yeah, maybe he's going to win the N1. Maybe he'll go to New Japan and win the G1. Who knows?
We can only speculate and hope. But on that note, we are going to sign off for another month. But the long and winding Royal Road, very popular show amongst wrestlers, media, everybody. Everybody is finding the long and winding Royal Road. And the next edition for the month of March, it's going to be dropping next weekend. So do give us a preview.
I haven't actually recorded it yet, so I don't really want to jinx it. So what we're going to look at, like, basically we're going to look at the tag team of No Fear and review one of their matches. And basically my co-host at the time for that show, who I'm not going to say, we'll drop it when we actually record the show and announce it. But, he wants to look at like the history kind of Takao Mori, who's actually a very, very interesting person to look at if you're a fan of All Japan or if you're a fan of Pro Wrestling Noah as well, because he's one of those guys who jumped ship. But that's next week. But I do want to kind of keep it under my hat, my post-wrestling hat that you can buy over at the store, by the way.
There you go. Store.postwrestling.com to get all of your WH Park / Post Pro Res merchandise. And a long and winding Royal Road will be coming out next weekend. So as you
many people want to be on the show, John, like I
understand there's quite the list of potential guests coming up. So you got to be on the waiting list to get on with one WH Park.
That waiting list is just going to be even like more popular if some of the names come through. And that's all I'm going to say.
All right. That's a tease. I would imagine the next Post Pro Res, I should probably give this seat up for Karen, because if we're going to be around the Stardom shows, I think Karen should definitely be on those shows so we can discuss that. But I would imagine those are the big shows for you that you're looking forward to in the next month.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's March is stacked, though.
There's a lot of big shows going on.
There's a lot of big shows and a lot of interesting things that could potentially happen. But for my money, the shows that I'm like excited about, like, and the shows that I'm excited about top to bottom, John, like not just like one match or two matches on the card, like both nights of the Stardom, you know, shows from in March are like, oh my God, the 26th and 27th, both are like, I'm looking at these cards and I'm like, holy shit, those look both amazing. And I don't know which one I'm more excited about. Maybe night one, because it's the return of Kairi, but she's in a singles match the next night. So like, that's exciting too.
Yeah. They feel like very, very big cards, and this is weeks out. So, be a lot of coverage of those, here on the site that.
Yeah. We'll have Karen, maybe, I don't know, we can work out three of us, but if, you know, we'll see what happens. But I'm going to predict this, John, about those shows, about those Stardom shows, that I think they have the potential to be like game changer for the company in terms of like the buzz. When we had this Shuri Utami draw last year, the mm-hmm. buzz that came out of that was fantastic. I think the potential for the buzz, if these shows deliver, which I have every confidence that they will, the buzz that come out of these shows next month is going to propel Stardom to another level that we're going to be like, everyone's going to be like trying to get in on this bandwagon.
Yeah. The next 4 weeks are going to be interesting to see how much promotion Stardom really puts out, because with the first Utami Shuri match, a lot of it was coming out of the match. And for this, it's like you have 4 weeks to really build this up and get people's excitement going. And I'm curious to see kind of the promotion that Stardom tries to extend to like the English speaking audience as well, that I think this is a big opportunity for them to reach a new fan base, that this could be their jumping on point.
And if you're, you know, getting into Stardom, you want to learn more about it, you know, we know you got to go Post Wrestling, because Karen Peterson works, you know, does a lot of the analysis, previews, show reviews, and just, it's so in depth because she speaks Japanese.
Yes, the world renowned Karen Peterson. So check out all of her work at postwrestling.com. It's a synopsis every time she does a report on Stardom of just not just like a rundown of the show, but everything that's going on in Stardom. And it really does kind of set the table for all the stories that are happening, the shows that are coming up. It's like it's a great sort of tutorial, basically, if you're new to Stardom. So those are always up on the site at postwrestling.com. You can follow him at WH Park and the number 9. And thank you again for watching/listening to Post Pro Res. Goodbye.